We're going to talk about growing older in America, and I see a few people that have grown older, and I claim a bit of this myself. You can see that I have had a few years on me, so we'll try to think this through together. I want to do this in a biblical style, though. Usually it's very secular. We don't talk so much about being old out of a biblical environment. I'll give you a very brief picture of how I think we ought to think about the use of Scripture in the church in these days for the people of God. I think of the Scriptures as an environment which is back there, and we need to study it back there, but it won't really do us much good unless it invades our environment. And there's a struggle between the environment that we're experiencing and the environment of the biblical, and out of this comes a way by which we act as Christians. It's a little bit, to explain a little bit further, if you watch a television show, a movie, or a movie in a theater, you'll notice there are two things happening. Something you see with your eyes, and something you hear with your ears, and there's the dialogue. But underneath there's also a musical line. And what that music does is to provide an environment. It may be subtly different from or alike what's going on, but one way or another, you're experiencing two things happening at once. The dialogue of the play and whatever it is that's happening there, or the soap opera, and the music that's in the background that also tells you how to think about it. So it's really two different kinds of experiences that you're having. You're having this unaware, and when it's a very great movie, it seems as if they're exactly together, the music in the background and the dialogue that you hear. Now, that's one way of explaining it. The Bible, then, is perhaps that music coming in on what's happening to us and giving us subtly other kinds of experiences and understandings of it. Now, that's one way of explaining it. If you've been at Holden here before, it hasn't happened this week, it happened last week, you can see weather coming down the valley. Come those clouds, and they begin to hang over the peaks, and pretty soon, here you got it, a big conflict between the environment that's been here, which is nice, beautiful, warm, sunny weather, and this rainstorm that's coming. And a lot of times at Holden, it comes and goes, and during the day, you've got rain, and then you've got sun, and you can see the two in conflict sometimes when you see a rainbow coming, one weather system and another together. Now, that's the biblical environment coming into our own time and struggling with our environment, and out of it, out of that mix, not either there, you can get lost in the past, or here, you can get completely confused in the present, but in that mix comes the way by which we can make some decisions about our life, about how to act, what to do, how we live. Okay? Now, I'm going to give you some sweeping pictures of some books in the Old Testament to underline this, and we're going to talk about getting older, and that's going to be a theme that I'm going to try to play within the circumstance. But actually, I've got so doggone much material, don't know what to do with it, so you understand that if I abbreviate here and there, it's because I'm frustrated because there's still quite a bit more that could be said. Two or three people who came across here from Koinonia said, well, we're going to come here because we're experts on this. and we know the experience of growing older. I was just looking at a picture that one of the ladies had of her former home that was blasted by Mount St. Helens. And that is a growing older experience. It grayed her world, literally, with a volcanic dust and ash. And it, in a sense, I think probably said some things to her that she hasn't even completely figured out, because I don't think any of us have figured out what it meant that volcano blew like it did and what it did. That was a growing older experience. It matures you. It makes you think about life in ways that you hadn't thought about before. For one thing, there's been a lot of talk about how grand and beautiful nature is. And someplace or another, there's another kind of thing lurking under the surface of the ground that ain't quite so beautiful and ain't quite so nice that's there too in nature. Now, that's just the beginning of the kinds of things that you might think about there. Well, I'm going to try to take some biblical experiences of growing older, and we'll see just how it comes out. I'm not quite sure myself. Let me just ask you, I don't know whether you think about the Bible this way. Do you think about people growing older in the Bible, and do you have any images of people in the Older Testament? Now, I'm going to stick with the Older Testament because that's where my songs are. Sometime I may get into the New Testament. My hair is getting grayer and balder and a whole bunch of things. I'm not sure whether I'm going to make it there, but so we'll stick with the Older Testament. What persons jump out at you as you think about getting older? Moses, Methuselah. I was thinking about a folk song about Methuselah, and I don't have one. But there is a folk type song, and it isn't very gracious, a little raunchy. Gershwin's song, you know, it ain't necessarily so. There's one verse that goes, Methuselah lived 900 years. Methuselah lived 900 years. But who called that living if no gal would give in to a man who lives 900 years? I don't know. My wife says, I don't know whether you should sing that or not, but I decided I would. Because I think older people think about those kind of things too, and that we don't lose our zest for that kind of living and that kind of thinking, and I think there's something that diminishes us if we do. So, Methuselah, Moses, who else now? Abraham?
Noah?
Sarah? Yeah, some women have to come into this picture. Anybody else that you think? Jesus, it's interesting because he didn't grow older. He did grow older in the sense he grew to 30. Yeah, that's when he was crucified. Okay, another. Eli, yeah. Okay, you're beginning to see and you're beginning to get something of the feeling of what I'm talking about to do some reflection on those people. Not necessarily studying exactly the point of a story, though they may, you know, hit right directly, as we're going to find out with a couple of them, but just to say, how did they grow older? What happened to them? What were their experiences? And how did they deal with them? Now, I'm going to deal with what I think is one of the most fundamental books with regard to growing older. I think it establishes a point of grace for all of us. And I don't play this very well because I haven't done it. This is the first time I've ever done it with a group, and it's more difficult than most of the songs that I play. And so I'm an amateur all the way with the instrument. But this is the mystery of Job. And you may find this something that what I really need to do is work with you on it, to teach it to you, and I'm only going to be able to play it rather rapidly. So if you'll excuse me if I had time, and what I'd really like to do is be able to just spend time learning these songs the way they should, but you're just going to have to settle for less. This is the mystery of Job, and it's the story of the book. And I'll just sing the first three verses because the last verse carries us off into another point which is important, very important. But this is a reflection on Job as a person growing older and experiencing some of the difficulties of being older, as you well know the story. Job sat helpless in anguish and pain, tossed in his mind again and again. Why is this happening? What have I done? Death is a-rappin', my mind's on the run. Oh, 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 suffering Job. Oh, the mystery of Job. Okay, having trouble already here. I knew I would. The chorus goes like this. Oh, suffering Job. Oh, the mystery of Job. Got trouble coming to a chord too quick. Try just that chorus, and then maybe you can help me on the chorus each time. Oh, suffering Job. The mystery of Job. Okay, you can kind of sing along with that. Don't worry if you don't sing it quite right. I'm having trouble playing it right. So, three men, wise men, three men came, sat in silence, gave Job the blame. You ask what happened? Well, there's little doubt. make your confession, your sins are found out. Oh, suffering Job, the mystery of Job. Now, this is where it all gets down to brass tacks about Job. Job in misery pondered his fate. The three theologians don't have it straight. True, I'm not perfect, but whatever gives, one will speak for me, my Redeemer lives. Oh, oh, suffering Job, oh, the mystery of Job. Well, all that is to say that many people, as they grow older, have all sorts of ailments, sometimes fairly severe ailments, and it can very easily get us into the position of judgment, especially if we happen to be an older person who doesn't have any of those things. We just kind of swim along through, and we say, well, they had it coming to them. And the person with all those diseases and troubles says, what have I done? It must be my fault. And the book of Job is dealing with that. Or the person maybe has got no savings left. And you say, well, they should have been a little bit more careful here or there. Then it would be okay with them. But there's something in the book of Job saying, whatever persons have done, you can't blame it totally on them. It's just not quite fair. There is a grace in the book that comes and says that there's something of compassion we ought to have for every last living older person that survived, and that we ought to deal in that fashion, wherever they are. And that's a premise that I'd like to begin with, that I think the book of Job teaches. Do you understand what I'm saying? Is there any question about that? Okay, I'm just saying that if you've got a lot of problems of health, and somebody living next to you that you've grown up with, that you've known, has none, it can easily fall to your lot to begin to say, I've done something wrong. And everybody's done something wrong, and you can always lay it to something. And so you go back and you dig up all the guilt you've got. And Job is saying, there's something of a mystery about the grace of God. Don't torture yourself in addition to having all that ill health with the notion it's all your fault. I don't mean by that once in a while we haven't done some things that, you know, contribute to how things are in our older age. But basically, by and large, let's say that Christians and the people of God ought to have an attitude of compassion toward people. And I personally think anybody who survived to 60 or 65, it just ought to get a good deal of brownie points for having made it that far. That's kind of the way I think we ought to think in our lives about older people and about people growing older. So the mystery of Job is where I'd like to begin. Now, I'd like to look at some situations and of older people. And because we tend to always want to idealize this situation, I'm going to take one of the most devastating and, one of the worst pictures of an older person in the Bible. And I'll read it to you because I've always wanted to exorcise this passage. Not only do I feel that this passage is a kind of an image of an older person that really makes you feel sad about that, but I don't like the passage because of what's been done with it. In the ninth chapter of Genesis, story of Noah. We don't really read this story in Sunday school. In fact, I doubt if you've ever heard it read in church. Noah was the first tiller of the soil. He planted a vineyard, and he drank of the wine. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father, and told his two brothers outside. Then Shem and Japheth took a garment, laid it upon both their shoulders, and walked backward and covered the nakedness of their father. Their faces were turned away, and they did not see their father's nakedness. When Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his youngest son had done to him, he said, "Cursed be Canaan, the slave of slaves shall he be to his brothers. He also said, blessed by the Lord my God be Shem, and let Canaan be his slave. Now, this passage has one kind of meaning, or had one kind of meaning for Jewish people, and I don't think it was the best meaning. It was their explanation of why they had some sort of right of superiority over the Canaanites. I don't appreciate that. I don't feel that that's the way one treats the whole people and writes them off. Now, a worse thing has happened with this passage. Do you know what it is? This has been one of the fundamental passages for racism to define out black people. What and how the people of God felt toward the Canaanites, who were not black, by the way, is the way we can feel about black people and maybe even some other minority people. Well, that's just not the way that I think Christians can think about it. So I've been wrestling with that passage as it comes into my own time for a long time, and this is kind of how it came out. I wrote a book a long time ago called Legends from the Future, and I don't know whether people understood it. It certainly was not a bestseller. One way or another, it's about 10 or 12 years ago, and I wrestled with this because racism is, to me, one of the dominant evils of our time, and I wanted to get something out of that story. Because there may be other intentions God has with this story. And so I wrote this, and this is called Proper Cursing. God wasn't too sure he was pleased about Noah's getting all worked up over Ham and Canaan. First it's drinking, then it's cussing at them about seeing you. Piling up, he told Noah. That's okay, Lord, Noah answered. I figure I'm quite a ways in the black from all those early years. God swallowed hard, and then suggested that maybe the whole thing could be forgotten. Don't really want it in the scriptures. You know what the John Birchers will say. Put it in, shouted Noah. It's for all them rest home people that ain't getting much respect either. Okay, okay, God soothed him. Don't stir too much or your liver will start acting up again. Lots of people feel like drinking when life's over and they're still sitting around, Noah countered. Someplace even a guy that's drunk is a human. Walt was trying to start the world over. God had been so busy he hadn't given much time to think about it. And naked, too, interjected Noah. If I want to walk naked through the streets like a prophet, all right. But that's something else. If I want people to stare at me plumb bald from top to bottom, I'll decide. Trying to say his nudity ain't always a revelation. Did you ever notice that they rarely have an old man undressed on the New York stage? Later, Noah was reflecting on the matter more sagely. He chuckled, but then got back to his earlier irritations. When you want them to come, they don't. When you're not in the condition for anyone, they come traipsing in. And he went to sleep. He churned his cup, said God, but promised to himself to take some curses seriously on occasion. That's a picture of an older person in the Bible, drunk. Now, I am not laying this to any of your charges, but I worked for 3 or 4 years in public housing in Minneapolis. There was a high rise. Very close to where I worked, in fact, within a block. And they were mostly people who were poor, who were older people in that building. And there were people there none in that building had ever seen because they stayed in their room drinking. And that's the way it was. Now, I don't, in the spirit of Job, want to say it's all their fault. I think a lot of old people feel so lonely and utterly abandoned, but that's the only refuge they've got left. Their alcohol and their television. That's it. No other human contact. Now, that's a picture of an older person in America that we turn away from, don't think about very much, but should. Okay, so we looked at Job, we've looked at Noah for a little bit, and I want to say, by the way, all apologies to Noah. He did some other rather outstanding things earlier in his life. One way or another, it's a picture of an older person. For some reason or other, maybe all the glory was over, and even the greatest, Winston Churchill, all of the great figures. Some time comes when it's all over, and no matter who you are, you're just kind of a pathetic person sitting there someplace, and people forget you, and maybe you drink some. That's a picture. Okay, let's go to another picture. And this one we'll spend some time with because I think it's pretty fundamental that we think about her. I've got to bring the ladies in here. And a very important little book. We don't think of it from that direction so much, but it's a very important one. And that's the book of Ruth. Ruth and Naomi. And we're going to spend some time thinking about those two. And first of all, I'd just like to set the stage for life in the time of Ruth, which is the time of the judges. And so we'll sing a song about the time of the judges. And, they had a lot of troubles. Seemed as if the Midianites or the Canaanites or somebody was always moving in on them. And after a while, the oppression would get so bad that there'd have to be a judge raised up. And that was the time of the judges, where the book got its name. But this is the spirit of the time. Every man did what is right in his own eyes, and there was no king in the land. Every man under his tree, beneath the blue skies, and there was no king in the land. No one to say, I want your boy to march away in my employ. Everyone did what is right in his own eyes. Every man did what is right in his own eyes. And there was no king in the land. Every man under his tree, beneath the blue skies. And there was no king in the land. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? But there's another verse. And there was rape, and there was war, near genocide, maybe more. Everyone did what is right in his own eyes. That was the time. A very chaotic time. Sometimes good, sometimes really bad. Once they tried to wipe out a whole tribe, the tribe of Benjamin, all the rest of the tribe. Now, that was the kind of world that the book of Ruth is couched in the time of the judges. All right, let's go to the book of Ruth, and we'll sing. This you can sing very easily. This tune, you know, it's a cherry tree carol, Christmas carol, not quite so well known as some of the others, but I'm sure that you'll recognize the tune. And this is the story of Ruth, and let's get it in our mind and remember this background, and then we'll begin to talk about it some. It goes like this. When Naomi was an old one, an old one was he. She came back to her homeland, and her sorrow all could see. She came back to her homeland, and her sorrow all could see. That's a very familiar story. Let's sing along, and let's get it in our mind so that we can talk about it. So sing it with me. We'll start with that first verse, and we'll sing all those verses. When Naomi was an old one, an old one was she came back to her homeland, and her sorrow all could see. She came back to her homeland, and her sorrow all could see. Her husband dead, her two sons had left but widowed brides, and not a child for caring, though Ruth was at her side. And not a child for caring, though Ruth was at her side. And Ruth was now a stranger, a come from foreign lands, and not a penny having, save the working of her hands. And not a penny having,
say the working of her hand. And when the two were hungry, full hungry were they, Ruth went working in the field. Boaz saw her that day. Ruth went working in the field. Boaz saw her that day. And then the two were married. A happy time was this. And Naomi sang a new song, and all was wedded bliss. And Naomi sang a new song, and all was wedded bliss. They had a little baby of David's ancestry, and Ruth was in the family of the king from Galilee. And Ruth was in the family of the king from Galilee. Oh, you who mock at poor folk, or seek a race that's pure, oh, give reverence to the stranger, for the Ruth they will endure. Oh, give reverence to the stranger, for the Ruth they will endure.
Now, you all kind of remember the story. Is there anybody here that doesn't remember the story at all? I'm not going to burden you with telling something that you already know. And this is a story that we've got in our head from the song we just sang. Now, this story has some points, and I'm not trying to suggest that there aren't other things that we can draw from this book. But I think it's very important to see what happened to two older people in and among the people of God in another very different era. The plight of the widows as they lived in Moab, and also as they lived finally back in the little country of Israel. First of all, they had no social security. How do you know that? You should know it from the first verse or two. Yeah, but they had no social security like old folks have now. Why? Either Naomi or the younger widow, Ruth. No children. The way in older times you had social security was to have children. And whenever we think about those places where we say there ought to be population control, don't forget that there is no social security in those countries at all, and the only security people have is to have children, and since so many of them die young, they have a lot of them. And that's what's happening in our world, because there is no way that we've figured out about how to help people in their older age in those countries. And that's why the population control thing is a really difficult question to solve, and why, very logically, people will have as many children as they can, because they want to have some social security in their older age. Okay, that's just something off to the side a little bit. But she, Naomi, the older one, had no social security because her whole way of getting it was gone. Now, she was not penniless. There's a little part of the story that we don't reflect on that much, but she had a little ground which was hers from her husband Elimelech. And that comes into the story a little bit later in terms of the negotiation with regard to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, that was to come. She had a little ground from her husband. She'd gone to Moab because there had been such a famine in the land of Israel that it was better to try to live there. So she came back. Now, they also had a welfare system. And a friend back there began to tell us about that. What was the welfare system in that time? You were beginning to tell about how that, pardon? There was always some gleanings left. That was a rule, was a law, that you didn't harvest everything. That gave chance for anybody who wanted to come through who was poor to get enough for their own eating. We don't do that anymore. And the Indian population of our country has never got it straight. And we've kind of given an image of a feast to the Indian. There's some kind of a image we have running around there, because they've always thought whatever the earth produces is really for everybody. And we kind of drew lines around our property and said no. And some of the conflicts, that's not the only part of the conflict, between Native Americans and white folk who came, rest precisely there. So maybe they were closer to the system that was going in ancient Israel than our own time. So there was a primitive welfare system. That's very important to see, that the world has never been without, from ancient days, some remembrances of how we ought to be treating those who don't have as much as we do. And it was understood that you could go and you could work in fields. Now, because it was also a rough time, there's another side of this, that particularly as we begin to listen to some of our women friends talking about the situation of women in the world, it wasn't the best of times for them. Do any of you know or remember anything about the story that is rather fascinating, a little a bit, when Ruth went working in the field? Boaz, we don't really have a picture finally, because romance was not necessarily anything that happened very much in the ancient time. Boaz was rather taken with her, though, as a person, and thought she was pretty nice. So he said, "Now you come with the women who are working in my field, so that the young men don't molest you." And I have an image in a chaotic time that there were kind of harvesters that came through and helped, but they were a rough lot, and women were pretty vulnerable. And he said, "I'll put you under my protection." Now, that was the risk of being on welfare in that time, and the risk of being on welfare now, or on Social Security, if that's what you've gotten us all. There are some other kinds of risks, but there's been risks there. And then there was a system operating in this little society, it wasn't large, about how to get the family of Elimelech and Naomi back on track so that they could have continuity, which was very important to them. And I think all of us have some sense of that off and on, of how your memory is going to be perpetuated in your children. A lot of other reasons for wanting that line to continue, but there was a system. And so the latter part of the book of Ruth is dealing with that system of how they could arrange it so that it was required of the nearest relative to raise up children to the dead man. There's several times in the Bible that you hear stories about this. And in this case, that's where all the judgments were made, and sit there and talk about it and figure it all out. And that's the way it occurred. Now, that's called levirate marriage as a system. We don't follow that anymore. I don't know where we go. We got enough chaos the way it is. What it would be like if we added that in. But by the way, the Native Americans, there were some tribes at least who did something of the same thing. You raised up seed to the dead person if there was a wife that remained. So that's the way they handled it. Now let's kind of talk about some things, and I'll get back to this business of the book again. But what about the plight of women today as older persons? I'd like for you to reflect on that a little bit. Could you give me some clue about how you feel about the plight of women as older persons in our society? You think it's pretty good? Uh-huh. Some have it pretty good, but she's saying there's no place for some of them to go. And I would take it probably that though there may be a good level of rest home, that a lot more people don't really want to go there, but they have no choice. That's what you're saying. Yeah. But why is it particularly poignant for women? They live longer. Huh? How many years? Do you have any? Have you heard a statistic about that? Seven years is out of a very fine book which I've got on the board, which every one of you ought to buy and read religiously. It's one of the best real looks at older people in America today. It's about 8 years old in its statistics, but a marvelous book. All kinds of very, very fine insights about the situation of women. So they're 7 years longer in their lifespan. What else? That isn't the final irony of the matter. Do older women marry younger men, or younger women marry older men, as a rule? So not only do they have seven more years, but my wife is about 7 years younger. That means 14 years she may very easily live without me when I get up someplace there and the Lord says, okay, that's enough for Joe Bank. It's 14 years, you know, that she may have to live on beyond. Okay, now that's not even the whole of the matter. What are some other ironies about the plight of women? There are a lot more of them as they grow older. Even the population here probably reflects kinds of things that happen in society. There are less and less men. Twice as many men die between 45 and 64 as women. Very poignantly, when they're old, they don't know how to manage the business that they had. Yeah. Now, my mother was completely helpless when my father died. With respect to what to do, she was very frantic about all the affairs. She's not equipped that way. And if she's a younger widow, there's a further irony of that. She children to raise. She has no what? Vocation. She's not learned any job. And getting out there then, as you were saying, she has to take a job that's the lowest paying, because that's all she can do. It's kind of unskilled work. And that's very hard. Sometimes the welfare system, if she has to fall back on that, will enable her to go to school. But I've listened very closely for 3 or 4 years to those situations, and the welfare system twists as much as it helps people who would like to educate themselves and enable themselves to get better jobs and better work. So there are a lot of situations about women. So the woman, in many, many instances, it's said, and anyone here who's raised children, it's said that is no real work. You have to go out of the home and work and get your money there. So many, many widows, that's in the earlier years, have to let their children run helter-skelter because they may not have a job where they can really pay any kind of watching. And so there are many problems that women have in our society that are unique to them. And I just like to concentrate there, because I'm not saying there aren't problems for men. And I might have a few, concerns that way myself. But I'm saying that the situation of women is considerably worse. How about Social Security payments? Do you get as much as men? No. Frequently, the average is 82.5 of what men get. But that could be considerably less. It might not be 82%. That's just the average. So there are a lot of circumstances for women that we need to look at. Yeah, there are many, many very stories full of pathos about this. And someplace, it seems to me, if this society is ever to mature, it ought to figure out a different way of doing things than fragmenting it so that, for instance, families can't get welfare. It has to go to children, or it has to go to a person with this kind of problem or that kind of problem. It ought to be welfare for families. Now we could talk about that a great deal, but I'm wanting to focus in here on the older circumstances. You can also see, and I'll just make another slight detour, about how minority people feel. Do you know that there are a lot of minority people that don't want to pay into Social Security? That's pretty bad. Didn't they pay into Social Security? Why wouldn't they want to? Let me tell you a pretty grim fact. They don't live that long on an average. If you're a black older person, your lifespan will be 61. And it fell to 60 in the 60s. so it's going down, not up, that lifespan of black people. Indians, 44. Why would I want to pay into Social Security? It's money that's just robbing me of living now. Now, you can see some inequities and some things that ought to be thought about that people don't ordinarily think about. I heard one Native American guy stand and passionately declaim about this, and, you know, I thought, what's he saying? This is a good thing, you know. And then I began to listen to him. And so for minority people, it's even worse. And the circumstances of their older age is 85% of older minority people are at the poverty level, and they think it might be toward 90%. 90% living in that kind of circumstance. Now, we've got a lot of Naomis and Ruths running around in our society. And it seems to me we ought to really be thinking about that a great deal. Now, I want to do a little exercise, and I don't know how it's going to come out because I'm not quite sure whether you won't contradict each other. I know you wouldn't think of contradicting each other, but if we set up a budget for living as an older person, how much is paid for rent? Not a fancy place, but average place. In 1971, it was $139 for an older couple. Think you could get a place for $139 now? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where would you stay? Pardon? Yeah, there's some help that way. But HUD has buildings, but they don't have nearly as many as they have people. Okay, fine. What would say a minimal kind of amount of money for dwelling be? But let's just hear a figure. Anybody got a figure? 250? All right.
Depends on where you live.
Yeah. Might be less. Okay, how about food? In 1971, two people could get by on $24 a week. Hurry up now. Anybody do their, I'm not a good accountant, I don't do that, but does anybody kind of figure out how much it takes for one person to live? $25 per, so you're really talking about 50. How many of you would like to live on $50 a week? Okay, all right, so 50 is fairly good figure. Let's see, what else? Utilities. Now, we're talking here about the great share of older people, not about a few that do have some HUD benefits, talking about those that might not. Utilities getting to be quite a bill, isn't it? What should we budget for that?
And it may be that there is a whole group of people that have adequate amounts, and they can live and really rather enjoy, and I'm not trying to take away from them any enjoyment, but I'm saying there ought to be a vocation for older people in our time, a vocation to stick up for all the other older people that don't have it as well. And there are a lot of them that don't. And that high-rise building in that welfare community was so demoralized that there was nothing happening there. Nothing. And it was the most depressing building that you can imagine. And it was clean, it was kept nice, there were those kind of things done, but they'd given up, those people had. Now, to me, that's scandalous in the wealthiest society that the world has ever known, by a great, great, great deal. And we who are older, and I'll put myself with you, ought to be standing up on behalf of that sector of society that we represent. And frequently, those who have ought to be the spokesman because they may have the health and the energy and the concern, and certainly as Christians, the understanding of how they ought to be. They ought to be the ones that begin to give leadership, because older people are going to be a third of American life up ahead there. When I get to be 65 and 70, that's the way it's going to be. And we can either selfishly try to draw in everything so we get as much as we can for ourselves, or we can begin to talk about how the whole of society ought to be a different kind of thing. Now, Ruth, by the way, there are some things that happened that we can begin to understand that are very important, and in spite of what I've said about statistics, which are very bad, there are remarkable ways that poor, older people operate. Why was Ruth in such good circumstance? Or Naomi, I mean. Why was Naomi in such good circumstance? Because she lived a life that made her daughter-in-law's lover. And you know a little bit of in-law things. She must have been a remarkable woman that she'd survived all that kind of thing that goes on with such love from her daughter-in-laws that both of them wept when she left, and one of them cared so much for her that she decided to go with her. So that was a preparation, how she had lived before that time. Not everybody has that opportunity, by the way, so I don't want to put down somebody that doesn't have those circumstances. And so there was an alliance. The older with her craft, and she's a pretty crafty old lady, was Naomi. You read that book and you see her operating, and she knew what her society was about and how to move that society to do the thing that ought to be done. And that's the older wisdom and this younger energy. And the two together did some remarkable things. They got through, and they even got in the line of the ancestry of King David, and finally the ancestry of Jesus himself. So they were able to do something. There was that kind of thing. Now that's sort of where we ought to be getting at also. Okay, let me stop for a moment and see whether you have some questions or responses that you'd like to give. Yes. I'm not an authority on that. I can't really say. I'm not coming here as an authority on older people by any means at all. Well, a whole lot of things. This is one that was mentioned early as a model. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, my ancestors. Warts on their ears and their cheeks full of whiskers. God made a people of humble clay, fashioning strong ones with faith, but their sins they need rationing. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, my ancestors. Now this is just the story of Abraham in one verse. Abraham, he had a wife named Sarah. God promised them that in time she would bear a son. Many years later, the laughter satirical. No son will come, it will take near a miracle. They have some visions. That's what Pentecost is about. The old men dream dreams, not just the young. The old people got to start dreaming dreams of a different way society ought to be happening. And they ought to be giving support to the kinds of things that have to happen. Let me just briefly allude to something that indicates what I'm talking about. Some older people found that they had so little money that they couldn't afford to get married in their older age, because if they got married, their income would be cut. And so they lived together. Now, I don't know how you feel about that, but if you haven't got much, maybe at that moment it's a witness to the fact that something else ought to be happening about how money is distributed in our society. It ought to be more generous to people who get married in their older age, because older age people may want to marry a second time themselves. They have every right to, and many times every reason to, because it's a lonely life that we have. Now, it seems to me those people are testifying to something that's really out of whack about our system that has to be changed. Now, I think older people have got to look at our society with some kind of genuine flexibility. And that's harder as we get older. I've lived in the same house 20 years. I don't know what it would be like to live someplace else. I don't know whether I could even live someplace else. So we get more conservative in certain ways. Let's dream dreams this week. Let's think about some of the ways that society could be altered. A lot of us have had the notion that life should be this way, better. Childhood, education, 12 years sleep, 16 years, 20 years, it's over. Then work, till you get to be time to retire, then leisure. And that's the way we've made life in our Western society. What if we took those chunks and instead of putting them in age levels, we start talking about the fact that education should be a lifelong thing. And you wouldn't have to get all your education when you're young. In fact, you might even contribute to education. A lot of older people are being drawn into projects where they've got a lot to contribute, and education might turn out to be something else if older people, as they got older, came back for more education. The Lord knows the ministry is different 35 years later than it was when I came out of the seminary. And there's a real need to keep up with the changes that are going on in any job, any occupation, it's that way. And so there ought to be a change in our view about that. Maybe we shouldn't all be working all the time in those middle years. Maybe our society ought to think about how it would be possible every so often for parents who are really in those early years with small children. It's really tough. We see it up here at Holden Village, my wife taking care of the nursery. Some neat things that people can experience because there's somebody taking care of their kids. That's a pretty hard time in those early years where you've got nothing for the wife particularly but the chatter of children who don't have that big a vocabulary and don't think very much beyond the end of their nose. And to give them a chance to get some relaxation or to take a sabbatical every 7 years. Maybe those kind of things to loosen up the whole question of work. And then maybe we would be ready as we get older to do more leisure things. Maybe you don't have to stop working when you're 65. Why is it that there's so much to be done in public life in America that's not getting done because there doesn't seem to be anybody around to do it? And here are all the older people who come up to Holden because they'd still like to work and do something that's significant. Why isn't our society more flexible that way?